Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. It's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that's the miracle of my life, is Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you, and I thank you for that. If you're new in this room today, I want to welcome you to AA and our lovely young lady right there in the second row and Pablo back there. God, I envy you if you do what you're supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're in for the adventure of your life, let me tell you. I'm not one that did what I was supposed to do, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later. But I hope you get a sponsor, and I hope you get that book, and you get busy and do what everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober, as I've stayed sober for 13 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to come and share my life with you today in Florida, and I think this committee deserves one hell of a round of applause, I got to tell you. They just done a fabulous job. And I'll tell you guys what, I have been having one hell of a time in your beautiful city, let me tell you, and I thank you for having me. I have never been this part of Florida before, and I've thoroughly enjoyed myself, and people have been so kind to me, and I thank you for that. I want to thank Ann for picking me up from the airport. We had a great ride on the way over here, and I found out she was from California, and she drank in California, like, you know, she said, and I did not. I'd be dead if I drank in California, I can tell you that, the way I drank, but, you know, it was good to meet her, and I'm so glad we became friends this weekend and stuff. And you know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth, and one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes today. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska. You know, the number one football team in the nation. You guys remember that, don't you? But anyway, I was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand here today. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get me my current sponsor. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. I talked to him about a half an hour ago, as I do most days of my life, and he said, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They go there. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people who are the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here today, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today, you guys. It did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West Los Angeles, California, the biggest AA group in the world. There's 1,400 people in that group, and I am honored to be a member of it, let me tell you. And my group sends you their love and very best wishes, too, by the way. And they're sorry that some of you come to the World Conference in San Diego, but some of you were there, and I saw some of you, and it's just awesome to see you in Florida again, I got to tell you. But anyway, we had a fabulous weekend, didn't we? I will never forget. That was my third World Conference, and I intend to be there in the year 2000 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, I tell you what. And I hope if you didn't get to go, you get to come to that one. But anyway, you know, there's a reason that I have Clancy for a sponsor, and I need to tell you about that. The day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can tell you that. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape. Make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what was going on in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice, although I didn't really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I'd destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody, and I was dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought me my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. It absolutely devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's right in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about. Many of us pursued in the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was standing right on the line the day I got sober. And I'm truly grateful to stand here 13 years sober, because I really should be dead. And you guys, it didn't start at me standing on Skid Row, I got to tell you. I come from a lovely, lovely home there in Lincoln, and I want you to know that. And my mother wanted you to know it, too, I'll guarantee you that. I had a beautiful, sophisticated, elegant mother that died a year ago in March, and I miss my mom so much I cannot begin to tell you guys. And my mom was always so proud. Her daughter was 10 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when she died. And although she didn't really believe I was an alcoholic the day she died, if you want to know the truth, she thought I was having a few problems, and I sure as hell was, I can tell you that. But anyway, whenever I'd give a talk, I'd always talk to my mom, and this is what I miss most about her. I'd always call her up, and I'd say, Mom, I'm going to go speak here or whatever, you know, and she'd say, why do you have to get up there and tell those people all that stuff about you? They're not going to like you. And I'd always say, Mom, the rotter you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you. And she'd say, well, I don't understand that. And I'd say, well, you don't have to understand it. And she'd say, and don't tell those people that you're afraid because they don't like people that are afraid. And I'd always say, Mother, the more afraid you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you. And one more time, she'd say, I don't get it. And why would she get it, you guys? She wasn't an alcoholic. And then she'd always end up by saying to me, I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You come from good stock, and we don't air our dirty laundry in public. And I'd always say, Mom, it's not dirty anymore. And she didn't understand that either. But anyway, her daughter, you know, was truly grateful to have a mother like I had, I got to tell you. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my dad was an alcoholic, you guys, and I loved my father very, very much. And my dad died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know if that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether or not he ever found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. And, you know, one more time this afternoon, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here, and I would give any world if my father were alive this afternoon, because we would have one hell of a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she's a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas and retired here recently. Now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, it is a direct result of our beautiful program. I love my sister very, very much today. And I recently found out something about her. She's very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot in the Navy in Spain who got home from Operation Desert Storm not too long ago, who was in that first attack over there. And I am so grateful that war is over that you have no idea. Neither one of these people are alcoholic. I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of one hell of a bunch of trouble when I got sober. And I'm welcome to their homestead, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you want to know the truth. They're highly successful people, and they bore me to tears, I got to tell you guys. But I have a couple kids who are 34 and 35 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I am. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. You know, I love my kids very, very much. Please don't get me wrong, but they are indeed a couple of jerks. And my oldest son's an alcoholic, and I know our book says we don't call other people an alcoholic, but I'll call him one if I want to, because he is one. I don't work an Al-Anon program very well, but anyway, He got picked up for his number 9th drunk driving charge not too long ago, and one more time he's gotten out of it. It never ceases to amaze me the crap that we get away with, and I know I'm the last person in the world that can help that kid. I can just be an example to him and keep my mouth shut, and that's what I try and do. I have another son who's not an alcoholic, and he's not a drug addict, anything like that. He's just goofy is what he is, I love to tell this story because it shows you precisely how my life goes. I got the strangest phone call from a son of mine about 9 years ago in Los Angeles, and he said, Mom, I'm getting married tomorrow. And I thought, getting married tomorrow? It was a surprise to me that anybody would even have him, if you want to know the truth. And I said, Jeff, why do you call me the day before the wedding? Expect me to be back in Nebraska. I said, the Pope's in Los Angeles. I doubt if I can get a flight out of here. And he said, Mom, I don't expect you to come. It's just going to be a tiny little wedding. Don't worry about coming. Well, you don't tell people like me that stuff. I wanted to be there, and I was right about that. The planes were just jammed and stuff, and I was just in a twit. You have no idea. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and this is the kind of loving direction I get from my AA sponsor. He said, well, what are you going to do, walk? If you can't go, you can't go. Now shut up about it. I don't want to hear another word about it. And I did, and I talked to my mom the day after the wedding. I said, Mom, how'd the wedding go? And she said, it was very lovely, but who was that little girl with them? And I said, what little girl? And she said, well, apparently Jeff's got a 4-year-old daughter that you don't know anything about, and I suggest you call your son and talk to him about it. And I need to tell you guys that I was more than happy to do that, make no mistake about that. I called Nebraska, and I said, Jeff, how'd the wedding go? And he said, it was very nice, Mom. And I said, who was that little girl with you guys? And he said, Mom, that's my daughter. And I said, why didn't you tell me that I had a grandbaby? I was so upset with him. Not because I had a grandbaby, because I didn't know about it. And he said, Mom, I was afraid you'd get drunk. And I thought, get drunk? I wouldn't have gotten drunk. At least I don't think I would have. And I was on the first thing smoking out of LAX to get home and meet my little granddaughter. And I got to tell you guys, this child is the icing on the cake. She is the apple of my eye. Her name is Brandy, and doesn't that just figure? You know, I don't even want to tell you what her middle name is, but I will. Brandy and Alexandria. I said, you named my granddaughter after a drink? No, but anyway, she is the apple of my eye. And I flew out to California to give me cake at my number 10th AA birthday. And we have a Saturday night family meeting in the Pacific group. And people from all over the world come out and give their family members cakes and stuff. You give medallions here. We give people cakes in Southern California. But anyway, she flew out. And I was so honored to have her there and stuff. And she got off that airplane. And I knew I was going to be in big trouble because this little girl never shuts her mouth for 2 minutes, you guys. And I'm not used to being around little kids, and they drive me crazy real quick. And I said, Brandy, you ever be quiet? You're giving me a headache. And she said, Grandma, I have a lot to say. And if you don't like it, take some aspirin, is what she said to me. I think that we have a prospective member of AA on our hands there. I hope I'm wrong about that. I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 4 years ago in January. I took my second grandchild, a beautiful baby boy, that was born of my son and his wife. And I got to tell you guys that tears of gratitude on my cheeks because I should not have been standing there. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 3 years ago in January. I looked at my third grandchild, another beautiful baby boy that was born of my son and his wife, and one more time the tears were rolling. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska last January. I looked at my fourth grandbaby, another beautiful baby boy that was born of that alcoholic son of mine and his wife, and one more time the tears were rolling. Things with my family are very, very good today. It is only a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. And in my case, that's a good thing, I got to tell you guys, and I thank you for that as I stand here today. I thank you so much. That is the most precious gift I have gotten out of this program, is a relationship with my children. And at one time, I never thought I would have one, let me tell you. But anyway, you guys, when I was growing up, I was a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble, always in kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. But I knew what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged, and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this afternoon, and I honor that. I identify myself as an alcoholic from your podium. I used a lot of drugs, too. I need to make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a hell of a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. Everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. It doesn't happen anymore. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up, let me tell you. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name about it, and I loved them. They've been a downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here today. I can just feel it. That's it. One thing I love about Southern California, it's got so many sick men in it. I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day, and I'm getting age now. Girls with silver hair, men are starting to become very attracted to me, which opens up a whole new ball game, I got to tell you. Those young ones are nice girls, but sooner you got to talk to them, and they ain't got nothing to say I want to hear, I got to tell you. And I'm sure I have nothing to say they want to hear either. But anyway, I got to tell you guys a funny story while I think about it here. About 2 years ago, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and she says to me, she says, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding, you guys. She meant it. I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I gotta tell you." And furthermore, if I'd wanted you to sponsor me, I'd flown to Nashville and asked you. You know, I hear some women get this podium, you guys, and I wonder if they ever drank. I really do. I wonder if they do all their drinking one moment and somebody can shoot it to them through the keyhole with an eyedropper. You know, I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that freely in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room this afternoon, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life, I got to tell you. And besides that, my book tells me, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, and this is my favorite part of the book, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have. Then it goes on to say, because you can literally divert death death through misery feathers. And I found that to be very, very true in my sobriety. And if I offend anybody here this afternoon, I don't want to hear about it afterwards either. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. But most alcoholic women, I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell out of you, all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old, and I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew, we had two babies to take care of. And I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, and he used to come on and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man or a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my father would have laid one hand on my mother, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I really hate this guy very, very much, and I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job, and I hadn't even finished junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln, and the magic was put in Karen's life. I literally fell in love with nursing, and I made a plan in myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower, and I'm here to tell you from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes, but when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand up here this afternoon and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, and you're no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with under ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you today is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I went to work in the operating room there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in surgery. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position, and I drank and ran around with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they played hard. And I need to tell you that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high, and that'll do a lot for your security level if you're going to have surgery next week. But it has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank and I ran around with drunks is what I did. And at the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in the general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick of what my drinking was like. You know, I can really tell you about my drinking about 5 seconds flat if you want to know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And that's exactly what my drinking was like. It was all about Woodstock, let me tell you. That Woodstock they had last summer was a piece of crap compared to the one I went to, I got to tell you. Up there with a medical team of people who were supposed to be working at this big concert, what we were supposed to be doing. They hired about 10 nurses from the Midwest because they thought we'd be more responsible, and we were a seedy lot, let me tell you. I was the first one to sign up for this event, and I found none of the alcoholics to join me, and we made about 80 residents from the East Coast, and there we were at Woodstock. And, you know, by the end of that week, we couldn't find our narcotic keys, we couldn't find our narcotics. We probably sold them is what we did, but, you know, I remember very little about it if you want to know the truth, but I do remember standing in front of the stage the night that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe and Santana, all those groups that I love. You guys, I come from the roaring 60s, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. Things have not changed in my life one bit, I got to tell you. And, you know, I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have let Janis sponsor me if you want to know the truth. But anyway, I had the honor of handing her a fifth of vodka on stage in Kansas City, Missouri many, many years ago, and I used to think that was a neat thing to do. In retrospect, I can see how sick it was. The woman died from our disease and stuff. You know, well, my point I'm trying to make is that drinking at one time was a fun thing for me, you guys. It'd be a lot of me standing up and saying anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun, I remember the pain that it caused me. And it almost cost me my life. And I'm truly grateful to stand here 13 years sober, I got to tell you. And anyway, you know, like I said, our book talks about where to tell in a general way. And, you know, I love the horse races, too. Everything I'm not supposed to be doing. I've been to horse races in Omaha, Nebraska with a couple of nurses that I worked with, and the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race has been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I met two guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys want to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, nor the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, a little bitty town of about 200 people, and I found out something very interesting I know about Palmyra, Nebraska, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. And there I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking stark naked down the highway, my high heels carrying my purse, and it was February in Nebraska, and it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that. And today I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can tell you that. And of all the luck, the first person I ran into was a highway patrolman. And, you know, in Nebraska, the cops travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. And in California, a little bit smarter than that. And this guy stops his squad car, and he rolls down his window. He turns on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. And he said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. Well, you know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop, and I said, I'm not getting in your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm here to tell you guys that that made me madder than anything was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from the Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I will guarantee you. They were very busy at night at that downtown jail, not have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown, booked in that cop's raincoat. You know, cops keep raincoats in the trunks of their car for these occasions. And I went downtown, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking in his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him, all the delightful antics that we pose as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who was working in Palmyra, I did not know he was there, came walking up to me, and he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody. You know, and we all know better than that. And that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. You're going to drink, these things are going to happen to you, so what, you know. I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital that I worked at in the operating room there. One more time I'd been to horse races. One more time coming out of the blackout in their emergency room. You know, for a number of years I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking. And I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink, let me tell you. And I have a big mouth in sobriety, but I can tell you the pain is a teacher here. It's getting a lot better. And I'd smart up some guy at that horse race track, and he belted me right in the teeth is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me. As long as I live, I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, we love you so much. What is wrong with you? You are such a good nurse and stuff. We think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacity this man had that he would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought to myself, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm not proud as I stand here today. And, you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. Sorry, but that's the way I feel. And I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story I'm about ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should be not telling that from AA podiums. And I said, okay, Clancy, I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell it. And let those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'm going to kill you the next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason. And I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk. They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. Make no mistake about that. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, with his eyes pried open. As it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I got to tell you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse, you know, but anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And, you know, that's one thing that we should never do is drink and think at the same time, I got to tell you. I came up with this beautiful idea in my drunken stupor, and this is about 22 years ago, you guys, when Super Glue first came out. And Super Glue was powerful stuff. Mrs. Bobbitt has nothing on me, let me tell you. I was a forerunner before she ever got started, and I knew that stuff worked very, very well because my kids are plastering the house that wasn't moving, and I got that super glue, and I read the directions on that super glue, and like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly, and what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you get it off in 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you get it off in 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over this guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not... there was not one place this man did not have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. I woke up in the morning to screams of horror, like you cannot even believe it. You know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true, but I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can tell you that. We had a telephone by our bedroom, there in Lincoln. He called the cops, the police were out from our home, there's sirens going, there was an ambulance out there, the neighbors were gawking out of their windows, and you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not seem that things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there, and the cops were laughing, which led me to the whole thing was funny, and they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I stood and looked at those cops, and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sakes. They said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later, when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. They took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the host staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I might add. And it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get 2 surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And there's a paper written about that at Creighton, and then anybody in this room's thinking about going to medical school, or you can read about it if you want to. I'd have always wanted a paper written about it, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting the hell out of this marriage, because when this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut, and he would have too, I got to tell you. God only knows I couldn't have that happen. And I divorced that man one more time. And, you know, you guys on the brighter side of things here this afternoon, Alcoholics Anonymous really does work because we have an amends step in this program. And my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California and make amends to my ex-husband, where he currently is with his new wife and stuff. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't give a damn whether you're sorry or not. Get on that airplane and do what I'm asking you to do. Maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room this afternoon that when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But, yeah. We were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I can tell you guys that I walked away from that guy. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I can tell you the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming true in my life when I made those amends. So I know that this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. At this time in my life, I got involved with the most bizarre man I ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun to be doing it, I got to tell you guys. You know, you guys, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism. And I knew about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time this afternoon that self-knowledge does not mean a damn thing with our disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking, but we do have one that's called Into Action. And that is the only reason I'm standing here 13 years sober, I gotta tell you. It is Into Action that counts here and stuff. And anyway, the day came to me at the hospital, told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue and husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything you do in Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you either go into a treatment center or you no longer have this job. Well, you guys, you know, you don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved more than anything in the whole world, and I cannot say that enough this afternoon. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln. What I'm about ready to tell you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years in my sobriety before I'd ever mention this. I found myself stealing drugs from that nursing home. I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium, and I'd get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you were sadly mistaken. And the day came to me, the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients, you're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my narcotic keys at them, and I walked out the door before they fired me. I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview, and I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink, I had to take drugs, and I had no more choice than it. And I will tell you guys right up front here this afternoon, the fun was all with me or something I had to do. And when that happens, it's a whole different ballgame, I got to tell you. And, you know, I'll never forget what it felt like to shake and shake and die every single morning of my life till I got that vodka gag down, I got to tell you. And I never want to live like that again, I got to tell you guys. And I truly thank you for letting me be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it keeps me moving here. The very thought of going through that withdrawal again makes me about throw up, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, I kept that job for a short amount of time, doing the same things I was doing at that nursing home, stealing drugs, justifying in my head, I don't mean to do this, I'm not a bad person, this is a temporary thing, this is the last time I'm ever going to do it. And we all know that never happens for us. We just jump from the fat to the fire here. And the day came for me when I got caught red-handed, stealing some morphine from the hospital, and this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys, and you get out of this hospital, and don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done it too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short for me today, I lost my nursing license. I threw the one thing that I loved more than the whole world right down the toilet so I could drink. And like I said earlier, that is total insanity is what it is. And to make a long story short and short for me this afternoon, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I have traveled over the Midwest, I've prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And you know, I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. My sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person to be thinking that kind of garbage. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of the thing that happened to me out on those streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happened to me I would not repeat from your podium this afternoon, I got to tell you. But I'm sure that you had the general idea. And 2 years went by for me. And then I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. I don't even like Mad Dog, if you want to know the truth. And I literally could not believe it, you guys. My whole life went right before me that very last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened to me. But before that happened, I remember thinking there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area. And I remember thinking to myself, 2 years ago I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there. And I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital that I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I was coming off a quart or whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. And that is a lot of booze, that is a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to do. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over within 3 days, and perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. I lived in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for 30 solid days. And I had tubes coming out of my belly. They were draining foot off my liver. I had IVs going, and I just wanted to die is what I wanted to do. And obviously, I couldn't even do that right. And I used to scream at those nurses and say, you give me some Libin, you give me some Valium, you give me something. They said, that's the inhumane. Maybe I should have to go this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility, you guys. They knew exactly what they were doing with alcoholics. And they went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. And you need to fill every one of those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful as long as I am sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got about 10 people from AA to come and sit with me. And it was your original 12-step call, let me tell you guys. And God, I needed you. I needed you. I can't even begin to tell you how much I fell in love with you. And these people would sit with me by the hour, and they would say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date. And they were absolutely accurate about that. And I absolutely fell in love with these people because there was nobody in my life today, you guys. The day I got sober, nobody wanted anything to do with me except you, and I will be eternally grateful. I owe Alcoholics Anonymous a tremendous debt as I stand here this afternoon, and that's why I am a tremendously active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never want to forget what you did for me that day as long as I live, and I need to give that away on a constant basis, let me tell you. And I sponsor a lot of women, and I go on a lot of 12-step calls in Southern California. It's a constant reminder to me that I could be laying there, let me tell you. And anyway, the day came for me, you know, these people seen by the hour, and they'd say things just like, keep breathing, and they wouldn't tell me much at all, except, Karen, we're going to help you when you get out of here. And I believed you. I believed you, you guys. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked into the official treatment program at that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was AA. And there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you. And thank God I went to a good one. And I walked into group therapy the first time. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I needed you. I needed you so desperately on day one. But 3 days later, it was a whole different ballgame, and you started telling me what to do. And there was 14 men in that group. They were all younger than I was, and they were for drunk driving charges and stuff like that. I couldn't identify with these people. I did those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me, and he said, you think you're better than everybody else here, don't you? And I made a comment to this man that I would not repeat from your podium this afternoon. And as a direct result of that comment, I found myself in an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, you guys. And that is a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program. I completed that inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program, and I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We know what the hell we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town, and the old-timers were just making, I was driving them crazy is what I was doing. And, you know, God love the mean old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys. They literally saved my life, and they are dying off right and left, and they have taught me well, let me tell you. And they are so precious to me as I stand here this afternoon. But not in 1982, they weren't precious to me. And this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me at an AA meeting one day, and he said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't need the book and they don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You'll be this man's speaker. You're going to ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I'd heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go this Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way, you old-timers. And I will tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alkaline Anonymous into my life. And my life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in Karen's life. I never would have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I would not have asked him. And I found myself walking across that convention floor and asking him to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, why did he say that to me? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact that this old-timer called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if they brought me, if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you. Because if I don't do it for you, you're probably going to go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me today, and I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're going to become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I want you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous really did begin. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. And I'll guarantee that I say it today, too. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. And might as well start with my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. I wound up by sponsoring 56 women in that town. I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love those women very, very much. And I'll tell you why. They really showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women are still sober today. It's not because of me. They're active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell Clancy, I cannot go through that kind of humiliation. And he said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get up to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, tell those people that you've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room this afternoon. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went up there and asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I got to tell you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you want to know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred about 9.5 years ago, when one more time, I was stripped in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. And what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And I thank you for that, let me tell you. I thank you for that. I had nothing to do with it. It was your support that got me through that, let me tell you guys. I would not have done it on my own, I got to tell you. And thank God I have a mean sponsor. I wouldn't do anything if my sponsor hadn't made me do it. But anyway, I moved out to California about 9 years ago, and I told Clancy on the phone one day, I'd been out there to visit a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA, and if you were at the World Conference, you know that you were in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world now, don't you? But anyway, I really believe that as I stand. I know that we all believe that. We all should believe it. But anyway, I told my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to Southern California. I want to go on the Pacific Group. I want to live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd feel like a glutton and not been wrong about that either. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I want to be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single one of those things have come true in my life. And those are all gifts from AA, let me tell you. I do not deserve any of it, but I intend to take it, I got to tell you. And I have a couple quick stories to tell you. And these stories I love to share with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They are so precious in my recovery and stuff. And, you know, early on, my sponsor asked me, he said, Karen, where are you at with your spiritual program? And I said, Clancy, I don't have a spiritual program. I don't believe in God. I can't do that stuff. And he said, you know what? You don't have to believe in God. You don't have to want to do it. You just got to do it anyway. You know, and this is when I still lived in Nebraska, and he flipped open the big book, and he read to me. And he said, get your book open and read with me on the telephone. And he told me the page to look at. And he said, what does that say, Karen? And it says, I get a daily reprieve, contingent, on a spiritual maintenance of the power greater than myself. And he went on to sobriety. When I cannot help you, A cannot help you, and you had better well have a God in your life, or you'll be dead from the disease of alcoholism. And I believe that, you guys, as I stand here this afternoon, because it's happened to me many, many times in my sobriety. And thank God I had a God by the time it happened. One more time, I said to my sponsor, the magic words, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning and get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things. Pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And I said, all right. And I started doing that. And you guys, I did that for 2 years, and I didn't feel any connection with God. I felt like a fool doing it, if you want to know the truth. And this is when I still lived in Nebraska, and I tell my sponsor every day on the telephone, this is not working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. He said, Karen, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? You know, I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in Montreal, Canada. And if you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, we're going to have another one in the year 2000, let me tell you. It's something none of us should ever miss, let me tell you. Anyway, I'd driven up from Nebraska with a couple people I sponsored, and they didn't want to go to this thing in Montreal. We only had $200 apiece. We had no place to stay. And they said, we don't want to go. And I said, well, you're going anyway, because I can't afford to go by myself. And we got to Montreal, and we went to the convention center. We found an apartment rent for the whole weeks for $100. I could not believe our good luck. People were dumping like $100 a night for hotels, you guys, and we found a place for the whole week for $100. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 56,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium, and I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in absolute awe of this program. I will never forget that night as long as I live. And they were down there on the football field, and they were practicing for a flag ceremony. And alcoholics from all over the world carrying their national flags. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today when I meet people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor was down there helping them practice for that flag ceremony. And I ran down to tell Clancy Hine. He introduced me to people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ran back up and joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this as long as I live. I'll never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 56,000 sober people go absolutely crazy. And I looked around myself. I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people and all the people in between. And they all seemed to be loving this program so very, very much. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? You guys, I too wanted to love A, and I couldn't seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my entire life, I got tears in my eyes. I did not try and stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me to love this program as much as these people do. And I will tell you guys that I cried and I cried and I cried. And I will tell you that for one solid second, my world stopped. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally could not quit drinking, who literally could not get sober. And there she was, 3.5 years sober. I personally believe, and I'm not saying that this is what the way it should be, but I personally believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is divinely inspired. If you hang around here long enough, how can you help but not believe it too and stuff? And chills literally shot up and down my spine, I got to tell you guys. And I will tell you that a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we see when we're ready to see, we hear when we're ready to hear, and not before. But I also believe the actions my sponsor gave me got me to that point. I did it until I believed it, did it till I believed it and stuff. But anyway, it was a magnificent night in my life, and my sponsors taught me your sobriety does not depend upon people, places, or things, but upon your relationship with God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life really revolves around this program, I got to tell you. Anyway, you guys, I work in surgery at UCLA. I have a magnificent job, but it's just a damn job is all it is. This is more important to me than that, I got to tell you. At one time in my life, my nursing was the most important thing to me. It's secondarily to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you. But, you know, about 8 years ago, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to bitch about it, I'm sorry to say. And this one particular week, I'd worked 72 hours. You know what we're like? We're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I worked the night shift over there, and I had the night off, and I went home, went to a meeting earlier in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. I was just exhausted, and the phone rang at 2:00 in the morning. It was my boss, and my sponsor has taught me to answer the telephone, or I would never have answered it, I got to tell you. And she said, I got 18 people sick over here tonight. I need your help. I'm going to do a liver transplant on a little girl that's about 3 years old, and I need you to come to work. And I said, I have worked 72 hours this week. And she hung up on me is what she did. You know, my sponsors also taught me to do what's in front of me and not debate it. And that was clearly in front of me, I got to tell you. He always tells me, nobody nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen. You know, and I always say there's a first time for everything, Clancy. You know, but anyway, I was going to call him, but I know what he'd have told me. Get to work, you know. And I'm so glad that I did, because the most precious thing happened to me, I got to tell you. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to get our little patient, bring this little girl down to surgery, this little three-year-old. And we had a jet coming in from the East Coast for the liver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And he called me in the back, and he said, Karen, you're not going to believe all the people that were with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice. You know, I was so crabby, you can't believe it. And I went out front to get my little patient. And the first thing I noticed was there was probably about 75 people in this family, you guys. Highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. Highly unusual at any time, day or night, let me tell you. And the first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good-looking and stuff. And I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And this little girl was so sick she couldn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick. And I remember thinking to myself, you didn't want to be here, Karen. You didn't want to be here. How could you be like this? You know, and she had a little bear in her arms, and she had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life, and she was so sick she couldn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick, and I said, oh, you brought your little bear to surgery, and in her arms she had that little bear, and she had a blanket wrapped around that bear, and she was hanging on to him for dear life, let me tell you. And she tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant, and I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear. Anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room, and they were in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys, in absolute hysterics. And we took that little girl back to surgery, and this little child looked at me, and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand it when my mommy cries. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I've learned here, I could tell this little girl the truth. And I told her, I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so much. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit, you guys. And we put that child to sleep, and that 16-hour liver transplant did not go well, I got to tell you guys. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss and stuff. I have never seen an operating room team of people pull together like we pulled together tonight for that baby, and we were obsessed with getting her well, let me tell you. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with really not too much hope at all, you guys, and we said a silent prayer on that one, I got to tell you. And I became obsessed with this little girl, and I had to see her again. And at UCLA, we have a rule. You may not get involved with these transplant patients. They don't want to know where the organs come from. We cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room this afternoon that I am real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought to myself, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. And when that child was 6 days post-op from that transplant, I went up to her room, and I opened the door of that little girl's room. And you guys, I could not believe what was in front of me. My God, the power of God, the power of God. It was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had her diapers hanging around her knees. She had a baby bottle in one hand. She had that bear in the other arm, and she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And I just stood in that hall, and I just bawled, you guys. That whole room full of people were in there, let me tell you. And I thought, this is cute. Let them see the nursing staff bawling. That's just real cute, Karen. And I didn't even care at that point. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. Now, if you think I was going to stay out of that room, I didn't care if I got fired and I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 80 people had driven 500 miles to be with that family. And they showed me one more time what this deal is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all that it's about. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I just stood there and bawled. We were all bawling, you know. And they said, are you an A? And I said, no shit, you know. I asked the mother, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. And I thought, oh, my God, her little girl up for the first time. What a fabulous, fabulous birthday present. And I walked up to this little child. And she looked at me, and she said, go away. I'm not sick anymore. And I was standing in my scrub clothes on. It scared the hell out of her is what it did. And if I'd known I was going to the room, I certainly would have changed clothes. And I said, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I just came up here to see how you're doing. And you guys, she handed me her little bear. And she said, you take him home and take care of him. He's so sick, he needs a nurse to take care of him. I know why she did that. She wanted me to get the hell away from her is what she wanted. But I told the mother, I said, I can't take that little girl's bear home. My God, that bear went through that kid's liver transplant. You guys, we put it right by her little head the whole time of her surgery in a little plastic bag. And the anesthesiologist rested her head right on her cohort surgery. And I told the mother, and I said, please, you need to keep it as a memento. And she said, no, she wants you to have it. Please take it home with you. She has 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But I got to tell you that that bear is my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I thought to myself, I need to reciprocate here. I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party. And I remember something was in my pocket, a medallion for 5 years of sobriety. I was about 7 years sober when this happened. And I'd hung on to that medallion for 2 years too long, you guys. And we say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to give it away to keep it. You got to give it away. And I knew I'd found the person to give my 5-year medallion to. And Clancy gave me that medallion. I had a terrible time getting rid of it. Well, selfish in one respect or another. And I'm selfish in many areas. But I knew I'd found the person. And I gave her my medallion and wished her a very, very happy birthday. And she said, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave you that. And I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really meant that, you guys. I really wanted her to have that. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. And I got to tell you guys, it was the most magnificent day of my entire life, let me tell you. And I called my sponsor. I had never seen Clancy so excited in my life. He said, it happened to be Wednesday night, the night of my home group, the Pacific group. He says, we're going to take them all to the Pacific group tonight. Within about 2 hours, he had 50 cars in front of UCLA. We all went to his house for a barbecue. And I was so very, very proud to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous that night, the Pacific group. I've had no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know one thing. That little girl is doing very, very well, let me tell you. And, you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than what our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, that I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperate a day as I needed you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love you more than in the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to sit down here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row in Nebraska to where I stand tonight in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I think that but for this grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have missed it all. If you're in this room this afternoon, I don't sell to you. I give to you the program that saved my life. Thank you for having me, and let's all stay.